This is a Triple J podcast.
Hooray!
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Why are veterans protesting out the front of Parliament? Laying down their medals, saying that they're furious with the government. Well, in a bit, we're going to find out. G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. And coming up, we've got Senator Jackie Lambie joining us. And she's got a very direct message for the government when it comes to veteran support.
You probably should have done your homework first. And what they would have realised is not only have you put veterans through more than what they've had to go through, that this thing is never going to fly.
Yeah, that chat coming up very soon. Also ahead, are we getting a new world map? And why? What was wrong with the old one? We'll explain. First, though,
Hack.
Well, now One Nation is making a contentious pitch on superannuation.
On Triple J.
Would you like to have more access to your superannuation? Like, if you were allowed to tap into the thousands you've got accumulating there in your super to help pay your rent, your mortgage, would you do it? Because One Nation has announced a policy to allow just that. The party's saying it'll be enough to help people stay afloat in a cost of living crisis without, they say, having too much of an impact on retirement savings. So would you access your super for rent if you could? 0439757555. Really keen to get your thoughts on this. And do you think much about your super generally? Well, in a bit, we're going to get an expert's take. But first, here's April McLennan with an update.
We're allowing those struggling Australians to be able to access their super and use now for a period of up to 3 years.
One Nation has proposed radical reforms to our superannuation system. At a press conference in Canberra earlier today, party leader Pauline Hanson explained the plan.
Those people that are working, are renters or paying a mortgage, can apply to their superannuation fund to withdraw up to 3%, one quarter of their superannuation.
The so-called boost would only come from future super contributions, so not people's existing super savings. And that 3% would be taxed at a lower rate than the usual personal income tax rates. Senator Hanson reckons the average full-time worker earning about $90,500 would get an extra $2,300 in their pocket each year, which is about $44 a week.
It means that people can actually stay and put a roof over their head or keep the house.
Let's take a step back. What even is superannuation?
The longer you wait to take your superannuation seriously, the more it's going to impact you in the future.
I know you hate to hear it, but you really need to think about your super.
Superannuation, or super, is the way most Aussies save for their retirement. Basically, your employer sends a percentage of your pay into your super fund, and your super fund manages or invests this money for you until you retire. Then you can access this little nest egg from age 60. But not everyone loves the current system.
I think it's an absolute bullshit in a scam that you cannot access your super without getting permission to your own money.
As it stands, there's special circumstances where you can access your super savings early, like if you're facing severe financial hardship, trying to prevent the foreclosure of your home, or for some medical treatments. But the eligibility rules are strict, so it's pretty hard to do. Not everyone's a fan of One Nation's plan. Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers reckons it'd leave people tens of thousands of dollars worse off in retirement.
One Nation are risky and dangerous when it comes to the financial situation of Australian workers.
While Deputy Opposition Leader Jane Hume says the policy lacks substance.
This is, at this stage, not much more than a headline.
Greens Leader Larissa Waters says the government should be freezing rents and addressing the cost of living crisis so people aren't put in a position where they'd need to access their super early.
Well, you shouldn't have to dip into your retirement savings to be able to afford groceries and a roof over your head.
While One Nation's super plan may be a vote winner for people doing it tough, some economists warn it could not only impact your retirement savings, but have repercussions for the broader economy.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting there, and lots of different messages coming through right now. Someone's saying we're living longer than ever before, so we should not be touching super. I think this idea is crazy. But another person saying, do the math. Leaving money locked in super when you're still renting is a mistake. True retirement comfort is owning your own home outright. And someone else saying, how does this solve the housing supply issue? It'd just increase demand, is that person's thoughts. Look, Let's get into this conversation a little more now with someone who speaks a lot about finances and the economy. His name is Evan Lucas. Evan, thank you for joining us. I'm curious to hear what you think of One Nation's plan. Like, giving people more access to their super to help with stuff like rent or mortgage repayments, is it a yes or no from you?
Before I answer that question, I am going to put my hand up and say I'm going to come to this as purely as economic and personal finance as I can. I want to try and put the politics at the door because it's not about that. Access to your superannuation sounds great in principle. It is terribly economically damaging to the person and also to the overall economy as a whole. And why I'm so strong on that view is that we have seen this time and time again in the past where there is what is effectively a stimulus given to the person that ends up actually having an adverse outlet. So giving you access to what will effectively be 3% basis points of your superannuation. So instead of the 12% you're currently getting, you will get 9% into your superannuation and 3% will go back to paying for rent, paying for mortgages, etc. Is that it opens up a whole range of issues with this. So first and foremost, the first one to look at is that actually it does mean that instead of you paying your rent out of your own income that's after tax, your superannuation will do it, which means technically you're going to have more money in your back pocket, which sounds great because it takes the pressure off the cost of living. But that means that you're going to put that additional money into something else, like, okay, buying food, which is fantastic. But it could also mean that you go and do it at the local cafe, or it could also actually mean that we've seen in the past when this happens, you go and buy a discretionary item like a TV or a new chair or a table. And that puts upward pressure on inflation. And so the roundabout effect of this is that the RBA then will come through sooner or later and go, well, actually, we've still got an inflation problem. And despite the fact that this is helping with the cost of living by paying rent and your mortgage, we're going to have to raise rates to slow the economy down because we've got an inflation problem.
We have Barnaby Joyce from One Nation saying he believes that the impact on inflation would be undetectable. And the argument from One Nation as well is, look, we should trust that people can make the best decisions for them when it comes to their superannuation and they will do the right thing. They're not going to just spend it on stuff they don't need. In the past, when people have had more access to their superannuation, I'm thinking during COVID times, when they opened it up a bit, did we see this great big influx of people going and grabbing money?
We did, unfortunately. So the opportunity then under the Morrison government was obviously to do exactly what we're talking about here. Some people drained their superannuation to zero in that space. Now, COVID, unfortunately, isn't a great example because the reaction to it was so unknown. The differentials between those that took money out of their super and those that didn't has actually led to, in 6 years, in some cases, as much as a 45% difference in the retirement savings as of now. So they're already 45% behind those that didn't touch it. Then you think about how long they've got to retirement. I think the better way to answer that question is, let's say the superannuation idea that One Nation was to bring out was to happen today, Dave. Even in 10 years' time, starting at zero, the difference is about $40,000. So you have about $110,000, $111,000 if you're on 9% savings versus about $150,000 if you're on the 12. If you go out to the 30 years that this takes, the difference is just over $250,000. And this is what is so hard to equate because time is a very hard thing for people to understand and to work out. But your money isn't just for today. Your money is for tomorrow and beyond. And superannuation is exactly that. It's doing twofold. It's taking pressure off the government and having to pay welfare, which is a good thing. The government needs to do other services like health, for example, education. And therefore, that gap of $250,000 is the difference between whether you have to go on welfare or not. It's also the difference between having a good retirement and not. And so it's just so hard to tell people that, you know, you can't have it now. You need to wait for the future. But your money is working positively for you much, much better than putting it towards a short-term opportunity in a short-term issue.
I guess it's really hard for a lot of people to accept that when they know the money's there and maybe they are struggling and they can't afford their rent or they're really not seeing how they can get by day to day. I mean, can people already access their superannuation if they're in a time of hardship?
Yes, there is hardships for that. And there is super programs that do it. There is also mainly built into most industry supers and retail supers, some form of life insurance. Now, that life insurance in there will have something along the lines of a disability payment or a lump sum payment for anything that you're describing. So there are mechanisms out there. Again, I think the broader question, though, is, you know, the pressure that's currently on the household is not just changing the superannuation story. It's about looking at the overall mix and tax pressures that are on the household as a whole. And I think that the argument that needs to come here is you know, is personal income tax set up correct? Because the better way to help the household is to make the tax on personal income much, much more stable and much more equal. The superannuation system is designed to basically make sure that every one of us out there that works will have the knowledge that when they retire, they can live a comfortable lifestyle.
Evan Lucas, really appreciate you joining us on Hack.
Dave, thanks for having me.
And obviously, so many thoughts on this idea coming through on the text line now. Someone's saying, look, my mate took out all of his super during COVID, gambled it away on the pokies. Someone else, I've had to access about 20 grand's worth of super in the past 6 years to pay for medical things like surgery. I don't recommend it at all. I now have less than $50,000 in super and my body doesn't have many more years worth of work left in it, so I'm stuffed. Another person saying, 1,000% I would use my super to assist my daily struggles. Anything would help me right now. Another person, an absolutely stupid idea. This generation of forever renters will forever be retiring without the security of owning their own home. This is just draining future savings and I think it's dumb. But someone else, I agree with the idea. I need the money now to buy a house and I want to use my super. There are a heap of opinions on this. There's a lot of people who are against it though. Another person saying, we can already access our super in some circumstances, as we just heard. I feel like this is a cop-out by austerity-loving politicians. Another person saying cost of living is an issue that needs to be addressed without asking people to disadvantage their future selves. All right, big thoughts on that. We might try and tap back into it at some stage, but we're going to move on now.
This is Hack.
Veterans have laid down their medals in protest outside Parliament today.
On Triple J.
The veteran community is furious with the government at the moment. There were protests outside Parliament today, people demanding more conversations with the Department of Veteran Affairs, saying they don't feel like they're being supported. They don't feel like those who are supposed to be looking out for them have their best interests at heart. Now, all of this comes 2 years after a Royal Commission into Veteran Suicides handed down its final report with a bunch of recommendations. And in a bit, we're going to speak with the politician who helped get that Royal Commission up and going, Senator Jackie Lambie. But first, Jackson Worthington's been speaking to some vets to find out what is going on.
I know I decided before I was 10 that I wanted to join the Defence Force. It was a career path that the overall goal was to protect the country that I called home.
In the next year, Kendall Burke plans to reach the peak of 73 mountains across Tasmania. It's a personal challenge to honour the lives of veterans who died by suicide in 2023.
Since 2018, my life has been an ongoing struggle. You have such a massive sense of shame that you are no longer good enough.
Kendall joined the Navy straight out of high school. She served for about 7 years before being medically discharged in 2018.
It became a pivotal part of my identity.
Kendall was injured in a small boat accident while deployed. It left her with permanent damage to her left arm and back. She says she struggled with her mental health every day since leaving defence.
When you leave the forces, you have no purpose, you have no direction, you have no meaning, and you literally wake up and you think, what on earth am I doing with my life?
Veterans face higher rates of suicide than the Australian population, according to the Institute of Health and Welfare. Kendall says she still struggles with suicidal thoughts. She's doing this challenge to raise money for a mental health charity and a wellness program that supports veterans and first responders.
I see it as a commitment to those individuals that we've lost, to those individuals that are still struggling, and to ensure that nobody has to fight this fight on their own.
She believes not enough has changed since the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicides, and she's worried about the impact of a new $5,000 cap on allied health services for veterans.
Before me lie the medals of the men and women who served our nation with courage, commitment and sacrifice.
Kendall's not alone. Earlier today, a group of veterans laid down their service medals on the lawns of Parliament House in protest of the proposed cap.
Each medal represents deeds of valour, loyalty.
John Armfield from Fair Care for Veterans was one of them.
But the promises these medals represent cannot be honoured in ceremony, and then abandoned in policy.
The government introduced the cap, which is currently out for consultation in the May budget. It means veterans can only spend $5,000 per year on allied health services starting in July 2027. The government describes the cap as a threshold and says it's investing almost $170 million to strengthen veteran access to allied health services. Fair Care for Veterans is part of a coalition of veteran support groups who met with the Minister for Veterans Affairs and the Prime Minister today. They're calling on the government to scrap the cap, improve payment rates for allied health services, and for an independent inquiry into the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Why are we arguing? Why are we here today about rationing treatment instead of addressing why so many veterans need that treatment in the first place?
The Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicides was handed down in 2024. It made 122 recommendations, many of which relate to the culture within defence. The government responded to that report in December that year, accepting most of the recommendations. And in June this year, Minister for Veterans Affairs Matt Keogh announced sweeping reforms aimed at improving support for veterans.
We've had up until this point three different schemes under three different acts, been very complex, and some veterans have fallen under all three of those schemes. And the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide said, frankly, this is crazy. It's adding to the stress of veterans. It's contributing to suicidality in the veteran community.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese was asked about the caps in Question Time today. He told Parliament under the new system, veterans will be able to access $5,000 worth of care before they need to seek another referral. He says veterans who need more support will have access to it.
The changes will not impact veterans on the special rate disability pension, TPIs, or those who have been determined to be catastrophically injured. My government's priority is ensuring that veterans receive high-quality care that supports their health and their well-being.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there. Look, someone who is really not happy with how the government's plan to change the way veterans access allied health services is playing out is Tasmanian Senator Jackie Lambie. Now, you may remember Senator Lambie actually served herself and has been really outspoken over the years on how she thinks we need to change the way vets are treated in this country. Last month in Parliament, she blasted the Prime Minister on this issue.
I'm asking you once more. I'm begging you, Prime Minister. We are already suffering enough. Drop the bloody cap. Veterans have had enough. Leave us alone.
Well, look, she's with us right now to talk about these issues a bit more. Senator Jackie Lambie, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me on.
What do you think of this $5,000 cap for allied health services for veterans? I mean, heard a bit of what you had to say there. I'm guessing you're not a huge fan.
No, I'm definitely not a huge fan. It doesn't need a cap on it. That's the first thing. So somebody like me that had an operation, had problems over the last probably 8 to 10 months, I can guarantee you, for me to be using all that, I'm going through that $5,000 cap within about 5 weeks. Okay, and you expect me to go back. Now, the thing is with DVA, none of us trust the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they've brought that on themselves over the years. We just do not believe that if we need more of these treatments, you're going to be able to tick us off in 24 hours. What you're going to do is you're going to leave a gap between our treatment, and that is not going to be helpful at all. There could be 4 to 6 weeks where we can't access any of that treatment, and that's going to put us behind. And not just that, can you imagine what that does to their mental health?
The government's saying, look, the most vulnerable veterans are going to be looked after. They're saying we're consulting now that want to get this right. Do you have faith that the government is working in good faith here?
No, because as a veteran, how about you go out and consult to start with and actually bring in your service organisations? Because, I mean, you bring them in any other time. Why weren't any of these people spoken to, even on the round tables? So this thing was just chucked in the air and thrown at us, and we're like, whoa, 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 which, by the way, is the worst thing you can do for a veteran, because that just sent probably about 20 or 25% of them going, oh, my God, I'm in a head spin. So now they're in a worse place. They just don't need this sort of pressure. You probably should have done your homework first, and what they would have realised is not only have you put veterans through more than what they've had to go through, that this thing is never going to fly.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm joined by Senator Jackie Lambie, and we're talking about this plan to cap allied health service funding for veterans. She's obviously against this idea. She says it won't work. Senator Lambie, it's been about 2 years since this Royal Commission into Veterans Suicide delivered its final report. I know that you're saying that a lot more should have changed in that time. You've also opened up in Parliament recently about your own health issues, and one of those was vaginal prolapse, which you say is directly connected to back injuries you got in the army. You got really emotional in Parliament when you described the impact that's had on your life. How are things now?
I have to say that I do feel much better since I've had that done. I've still got some back issues going on, but I'll tell you what it's done for many women out there. It's been phenomenal, and they've found their voice, and I think that's a good thing. And what it does show me, and obviously when you mention something like that, then everybody comes through with a lot more information. It's actually worse out there than what I thought, even worse in those rural and regional areas. We just don't have the gynaecologists, and we certainly don't have the physiotherapists in place that actually just deal with this. That's one of the biggest things that we're missing. You would know already, and people in rural and regional areas know, unless it's an absolute emergency, you could be waiting 4 to 6 weeks just to see your GP, because you'll sit there and wait in line.
Did you ever have any idea of the risk to your health that, like, this could happen, or that other women in the army had experienced it?
No, and I will say this, I'll never regret my time in uniform. I want to make sure that's quite clear out there. My problem has always been with the Department of Veterans Affairs, but what I do know is they've got no scientific evidence. They haven't bothered to do this defence as per usual, even though this was I asked them about this when they wanted to put women on the front line, where they had scientific evidence. Could they show me that this will do nothing to our reproductive system? They wouldn't supply that. They've never supplied that, and they still haven't done anything about gathering scientific evidence on what this is doing to women. When they say we're carrying one third of our body weight, they're full of it. Okay, there was nothing stopping me carrying 40 or 45 kilos on my back when I was 60 kilos. That's just what you do. You have to do that, especially if you're in those combat units, because you must keep up with those men.
Do you reckon there's enough consideration of the specific injuries that female veterans are suffering?
Oh, absolutely, I do not. Defence has got more money than anybody else I know. Should have already been looking into this and doing something. They've failed miserably. They have not done anything. We keep putting on more female generals, yet our health, women's health, coming out of defence and serving in defence is getting worse. We don't even have a statement of principle for a prolapse in the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's just something that they have never looked into properly. I don't understand why we can have an SO, statement of principle for erectile dysfunction, but apparently our vaginas must be made of Australian steel, mate, because they never go down. I mean, fair dinkum.
Do you reckon there's a lot of women who kind of battling in silence here, and, you know, they're feeling a bit of shame or stigma and they're not sure what to do?
Yeah, I think you are. But what I will tell you is that doctors have been coming up to me and contacting my office over the next week. So not only did they have their waiting list, now people are saying, you know what, if Lambie's got hers fixed, I want to go and get my fixed. So they're inundated with bloody calls. So whatever they had on their waiting list now apparently has just doubled in a matter of 2 weeks. That's where we're at today. And good on those women for having the courage now to say, you know what, I can get this fixed and I'm going to get this fixed. And so they should, because living with it is hell.
And Senator, just finally, any message to the Prime Minister, the Veterans Affairs Minister, when it comes to veterans' health?
I just think for both of those men right now today, the best thing that you could do without putting any more mental torment on us veterans is scrap the cap. Simple as that. If you want to look good today, don't worry about the consulting, because I think you've already heard enough. Otherwise, what you're going to see is it won't be just a dozen of former military coming up here. You'll see them standing out the front, because I'll call them in. That's what we'll do. So unless you want to see thousands standing out the front of Parliament, we're at that point again. We're at the sticky point where that's how we got the Royal Commission. And if it means that we have to all stand out there, stand out the front again somewhere of a parliament, then that's what we'll do.
Senator Jackie Lambie, really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And a reminder, if you do need support, Lifeline is always there on 13 11 14. There's also Open Arms, which provides specific support for people in the veterans communities and their families, 1800 011 046. A lot of messages on this. Someone says, I can't believe this, but I agree with Jackie Lambie, everything she's saying. Our vets deserve to be cared for fully, ongoing and with respect. Another person, ditch the politicians' pensions and pay rises. Put the money into our veterans. They put their lives on the line to keep our country safe. Politicians talk crap all their career and get a lifelong pension and benefits, is that person's opinion. Someone else, as a veteran, I'd blow through this cap in less than 3 months. Why does my doctor's medical advice need to be reviewed by a public servant with no medical training? And another person says, why is the government going after vets and people with disability on the NDIS and not taxing big oil, gas and billionaires?
This is Hack.
Let's get a little bit more on that UN General Assembly vote in support of phasing out the traditional world map.
On Triple J.
Have we been looking at the world completely wrong? The view we have of our globe, is it accurate or inaccurate? I'm not talking about the Earth being flat or some strange shape. I'm talking about the scale of it all. Because there's a different map that experts reckon we should be using instead. And the United Nations has voted to adopt it. Except the United States. That was one country that voted against this plan. So let's learn a bit more now with Sarah Hamilton, who's a map maker and author. G'day, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Oh, pleased to be here.
What is wrong with the map that we've been using for centuries?
Well, to fully explain this, I'm going to have to give you a very quick lesson in map making. So essentially, any global map, you're taking the planet, which is a sphere, except it's not quite a sphere. It's more kind of squashed and not very smooth, so kind of like a mandarin. And you're attempting to represent it on a flat surface. And there's simply no way that you can do that without distorting real life. So you actually have a bunch of decisions to make about whether or not you're going to choose to preserve angles and areas or shapes and Really, I suppose the subjectivity comes into a map when you start making those decisions. The map that we've been using for many centuries was put together by Mercator in 1569, and that was what's called a cylindrical projection, which basically, if we go back to the idea of a mandarin, if you've got to peel that mandarin and put it on a flat surface to turn it into a map, how do you do that? And a cylindrical projection basically, if you take a piece of paper and wrap it around the mandarin, it's going to be really accurate at any point where that paper is touching the mandarin and inaccurate elsewhere. So the map that we've been looking at is reasonably accurate around the equator, but then it starts to sort of squish. It's reasonably accurate in terms of shapes and angles, but not very accurate in terms of areas.
Okay.
So it compresses countries around the equator and expands them at the poles.
So basically there are some countries that seem bigger than they are, some countries perhaps that seem smaller than they actually are. I mean, how is this new map different? Like, what kinds of changes would you notice if you were looking at it for the first time?
Well, the new map actually tries to preserve relative areas of continents and countries. So the old map looks at preserving shapes and angles. But here we're looking at preserving areas and, in particular, of countries that are kind of close to the equator.
And so how will this change, you know, the way we live our lives? Like, is it likely that changes to the map will change, you know, the way that we do things on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think maps are really influential, like a whole kind of family, I guess, of scientific pictures, like plots and tables and graphs. They carry authority because they're underlain by data, and they influence the mind of the reader. So if you're looking at a global map that, emphasizes the area of Africa or Australia in relation to the US, then that inevitably is going to carry a message to the reader about the relative importance of those countries.
And just quickly, how are we going to fare up in this new map? Like, is Australia looking bigger?
Yeah, it is. So because Australia is reasonably close to the equator, it was compressed in the Mercator map, the old one, and it's less compressed in the new one.
Okay, interesting stuff. And as a map maker yourself, is this kind of really interesting stuff for you? Like, were you, when you saw this news, were you thinking, gosh, this is crazy. This is what I spend my whole day talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I heard it on the ABC this morning and one of my sons was rabbiting on at me in the kitchen and I was going, shush, shush, I want to listen to this. And I guess, there's a part of me that sort of thinks, well, the UN might adopt this resolution to use that projection, but really, what it takes in terms of map making is cultural change, right? And that, that drives community adoption. And the reality in this world is that flows of spatial data are controlled by companies like Google in the Silicon Valley, and they seem to have surpassed the nation's state as today's map makers. So it will be interesting to see what the transition are, you know, in terms of society, I suppose.
It will indeed. Sarah Hamilton, map maker, really appreciate you coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here.
But that's all for Hack.